What do you remember from the last three classes? Any point that really sticks in your mind? Raise your hands. From Mataji's two classes, my class yesterday, yes. Regarding?
Eternal. I mean, how Jiva is eternal. In that class, you were explaining that. How Jiva came into existence. You said Jiva is eternal.
Yes, yes.
When Krishna was existing, even Jiva was also existing.
Immediately.
Immediately.
Yeah, we are eternal. Now, if we actually accepted that deeply, that I am eternal, just think of how your life would change and what you would consider important and not important, significant and insignificant. What an amazing point. And indeed, if you think about it, we feel eternal. We feel as if we are eternal. Somehow, here I am in this body, in this circumstance, and I feel like I've always been me, and I've always, that sense of I-ness of me and my existence, it's always been with me, even when I was 6 years old. I remember the same person was me. I don't think I remember much before that, but I remember being 6 years old and it was me. I was in the second grade, maybe that was 7 years old, something like that. Something happened. It was me. Now, I don't remember before that, and now I'm 63, and I was 40, 50, it was always me. And then, so I can assume when I'm 70, if Krishna gives me that age. So why should I assume that suddenly, through all these different changes of bodies, suddenly I'm not going to exist anymore? I've existed through all these different changes of bodies, so why should I assume automatically that I won't exist when this body leaves? And that, because I've existed throughout all these changes of bodies, so when I except a new body, why would I not exist? That's what Krishna said. We read that. What verse? What's the verse? Dehenosmin yatadehi komaram jovaram jara. Thank you. Any other points? Do you remember? That struck you? Yes. Faith and belief and, oh, it's nice that you believe that. Okay, go to sleep for a while, and then when you grow up, then we'll talk about reality. That's actually what the mood of the atheistical scientists, not all scientists, but those who are atheistical. It's okay, because we're evolving. That's the idea. We're evolving. So this idea of religion was good when we were more primitive. But now that we are intelligent, can actually understand the universe, so we can take that in. It's like a child being afraid of the dark. So you tell him it's all right, it's all right. You give him some stuffed bear to hold on to or something. But when you're an adult, you're not afraid of the dark. Some of us maybe a little bit, but especially if you're walking down the street in Fitzroy at night. Footscray. Yes, that's what it is. I'm not from this place. What to do? But that is the point that we'd like to talk about right now. Now we will present scientific fact. This one is we heard about the rise of life, and you thought that was wonderful. How somehow or another it just happened, even though it's basically impossible. And not only it happened and it's basically impossible, but it happened and it's basically impossible and no one can duplicate it and do it to prove it, because that's what science is supposed to do. We say life comes from chemicals, so here are the chemicals, I'm going to make life. Of course we can't do it, but Kal, don't worry. Huh? It's a miracle. Indeed. So now, if you thought that was wonderful, wait till you see this. This is the scientific explanation of where the universe came from, all in existence came from, according to not the Bhagavad Gita, but the Bill Bryson Gita. A short history of nearly everything, not everything, very humble, but almost everything. This is an explanation of how where the universe came from. Because we look up at night and we see the stars and the sky and we naturally think, well, where did all this come from? So after you hear this, through science, you won't have to wonder anymore. It will explain everything. Okay. Yes, this is where everything comes from. Is this the doc file or the PDF? Okay. This is the chapter's, the beginning of it. It's called How to Build a Universe. Of course, he's being cute. He's writing in such a way that us sort of foolish people, we're not scientists, so we'll be able to understand these very, very deep scientific processes. Again, I put in the pictures. These aren't his pictures. What picture struck you from my presentation yesterday? Does anyone remember any of the pictures?
Cakes.
I also thought of cakes. I like cakes. Self-duplicating cakes would be great. Just, what a life. What a life it would be. Now, here we go. This is how to build a universe. You can take notes in case you... And that will be the examination at the end of this class. You'll be asked to build a universe, obviously. But there'll be a problem if we all build universes in the same room, so you'll have to go outside and find your own places. Okay. No matter how hard you try, you will never be able to grasp just how tiny, how spatially unassuming is a proton. It is just way too small. So a proton is so small. A proton is an infinitesimal part of an atom, which itself, of course, is an insubstantial thing. Protons are so small that a little dib of ink, like the dot on this eye, and this is a big eye because it's projected. We open up a book and just imagine how small the dot of an eye is. A proton is so small, a dot on an eye can hold something in the region of, what number is this? A lot of different opinions here. 500 billion of them, a dot on an eye. Rather more than the number of seconds contained in 500,000 years. So protons are exceedingly microscopic, to say the very least. Now imagine, if you can, and of course you can't. This is very good science here. Shrinking one of those protons down to a billionth of its normal size, so 500 billion shrunk down a billionth, so it's very small, to a billionth of its normal size into a space so small that it would make a proton look enormous, because a billion of those of this space would be equal the size of one proton. Now pack into that really, really, really small space. And by the way, this book, I did my research through Chaitanya Prabhu, There's 300,000 of these in print, these books. It's so popular, 300,000 of them have been sold. And people, I don't know what they think when they read these things. They think, oh, very deep. So now pack into that tiny, tiny space about an ounce of matter. Now try to conceive of that. And remember, this is science, not faith. So take an ounce of matter, it's that big, and then squeeze it and put it into that billionth of a billionth of a billionth of a billionth of a thing. Excellent. You've done it. You're ready to start a universe. Wait. Is that all there was? Wasn't there anything else funny? Now imagine if you... No, we have to go the other way. I'm lost. I'm also lost. After reading this, I'm more confused. Is there anything above it? Okay. Now we're ready to start a universe. Now here's the next step. Now if you can, and of course you can't, shrinking... We did read that. Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm assuming, of course, that you wish to build an inflationary universe. If you'd prefer instead to build a more old-fashioned standard big bag universe, you need an additional materials. Now, this is interesting because I'm not a scientist or a physicist, but what he's saying here is previously, old-fashioned universe means previously we thought the universe came from a big bang. But now, because we know more, it's an inflationary universe. So it's not just that big bang that we taught you in school 20 years ago, but now you take that theory and throw it away, and here's the new improved one that you have to have full faith in. I mean, full scientific, because it's all facts. We don't mention the word faith because that's religion. So this is the old-fashioned concept, and here's the new one, which is obviously true. Now, if you want to make an old-fashioned standard Big Bang universe, you need an additional material. In fact, you'll need to gather up everything there is, every last mote particle of matter between here and the edge of creation, and squeeze it into a spot so infinitesimally compact that it has no dimensions at all. Now, we're starting to get into the realm of inconceivability. Now, he's going to do something really, really funny here. Or not funny, but there's a word that Prabhupada would use to describe this. Now, what is that spot called? That's infinitesimally small, that has no dimensions. So, of course, that's quite contradictory. A spot that has no dimensions. It's contradictory. You can't have a spot that has no dimensions. If it has no dimensions, it has no existence. That's what it would seem. And that is known as a singularity. So here's the proof that it has existence, because we've given it the name of singularity. Now, this is a singularity, by the way. Everything in existence shrinking down into a... It's like a funnel, right? You put everything in existence in the funnel, and then you really squeeze it tight, and then it comes into a singularity. Okay. In either case, whether you're using an inflationary universe or a standard old-fashioned Big Bang universe, get ready for a really big bang. There it is. Okay. Is everyone ready? Hold on tight, by the way. Naturally, you wish to retire to a safe place to observe the spectacle of the Big Bang. Unfortunately, there is nowhere to retire to, because outside the singularity, there is nowhere. When the universe begins to expand, it won't be spreading out to fill a larger emptiness. The only space that exists is the space that it creates as it goes. This is standard. This is the explanation. I mean, he's saying it in a cute way, in a way that's well written and everything, so we laymen can understand. But this is the basic scientific theory. It is natural, or the only space that exists is the space as it creates as it goes. Now, this is inconceivable. Obviously, it's inconceivable. because it's expanding into something that doesn't exist. So what is that non-existence? Is there an existence of non-existence? Actually, Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita says both existence and non-existence comes from me. But we'll talk about that later. It is natural but wrong to visualize the singularity as a kind of pregnant dot hanging in a dark, boundless void. But there is no space, no darkness. The singularity has no around it. There is no space, because they're talking about something. They're saying that the source of the universe is inconceivable. Well, that's what we say, too. Krishna is quite inconceivable. That's what Krishna has in Achintya Shakti. That is the meaning of God. He has inconceivable potencies. So there's no space, no darkness. The singularity has no around it. There's no space for it to occupy, no place for it to be. We can't even ask how long it has been there, whether it has just lately popped into being, like a good idea, or whether it has been there forever, quietly awaiting the right moment. There is no past. Time doesn't exist, because they're saying that time also comes from the singularity. There is no past for it to emerge from. And so, from nothing, our universe begins. Hey! We've done it. Now, I mean, sometimes I think the Vedic philosophy is wild, but this is more wild. And notice he said, first he's creating this thing that there's a singularity, right? Which they're saying exists, right? The singularity, he's trying to convince us exists. But then what does he say right up there? Read that sentence. Well, is there a from nothing. So first he's trying to convince us that the singularity is there and it all comes from the singularity. And then he says it comes from nothing. So if it comes from something, and we don't know much about that something, okay, and it's inconceivable, but if it comes from nothing, it's atheism. And they're trying to push how smoothly he's just put in the concept that all in existence comes from nothing. And he's saying it's science. And what would Prabhupada call such people? What is his favorite word for such people? Yes, everyone knows Prabhupada. And now we know why they're rascals. I mean, it's obviously cheating. It's complete cheating, isn't it? Is that an honest statement? The whole first part is convincing us about the singularity. And yes, it's inconceivable. You won't be able to understand this. It's so small. It's so very small. And then try to put in that small space, put some matter, and then it just somehow or another, boom! And then he says, from nothing, everything comes. There's no God. It just sort of happened by itself. And you can't think about it because you won't be able to understand it. He's already said that a few times. Don't even think about this. You just accept it. Is this religion or science? What does it sound like to you? If we read those definitions of science, it doesn't fit into there. And if you read the definition of religion, the ardent belief, and they'll fight you on this point too. They'll fight you on it. Let's go on a little more. Listen to this. This is the most... The descriptions of creation in the Bhagavatam and everything like this. But this is wilder in one sense. Listen to this. In a single blinding pulse, which came from where? Nothing. No, okay. The blinding pulse came from nothing. Or do, I mean, how often do you see blinding pulses coming from nothing? But you should just believe it. When you grow up, you'll understand. In a single blinding pulse, a moment of glory, much too swift and expansive for any form of words. So I don't have to explain it to you, this thing that we believe. The singularity assumes heavenly dimensions, space beyond conception. In the first lively second, a second that many cosmologists will devote careers to shaving into ever fine wafers to find out how long it actually took for this second to come. It produced gravity and other forces that govern physics. So all the order, all the laws, all the principles that govern all that we see in existence came from nothing. Now, why would order come from nothing? Of course, if you drive in Bombay, you know how order comes from. No order comes from nothing. No one's in control. And what happens if no one's in control? There's chaos. But look, this is what we are taught. Now, there's more, too. In less than a minute, the universe is 1,000,000,000,000 miles across and growing fast. There is a lot of heat now. 10 billion degrees of it. Now, one would ask, how do you know this? Because science means that you have to experiment. You observe it. You experiment. And then, of course, you duplicate it. And then you adjust your theory. If what you duplicate doesn't match your original theory, you have to adjust the theory because science is fully objective. So there's enough millions of 10 billion degrees of heat, enough to begin the nuclear reactions that create the lighter elements, principally hydrogen and helium, with a dash, about one atom in 100 million, of lithium. So this is how they're explaining it. In 3 minutes, let's see the picture too. In 3 minutes, 93 minutes, not 5 minutes or 10 minutes. Maybe it's IST. I don't know. In 3 minutes, and who is there timing it? In 3 minutes, 98% of all the matter there is or will be has been produced, and we have a universe. So it's not so hard. You can all do it now. And it is a place of the most wondrous and gratifying possibilities and beautiful too. Because they're starting with what is known and trying to explain how the known came into being, the known being what we see around us. And this is their conclusion through their inductive logic of how it must have happened. And go ahead, keep going. And there it all is, just all coming in that way with all the laws that makes the waves form the way they do, that makes the snow sit on top of the mountain, that makes the waters reflect. We take all these things for granted. That makes the grass grow and all face in the same direction. To make the sheep say ba. Huh? It evolved after that. But the laws that make this happen all came into existence at that time. But where did these great laws come from? Well, why these laws? Well, maybe there's only one singularity here, or maybe there's... It's very peculiar. I mean, these beliefs are very, very... you have to have full faith. And there it all is. It all evolved from this. And keep going. And it was all done in about the time it takes to make a sandwich. So before we had cakes, and now we have sandwiches. I put in the pictures, so he didn't put them. When this moment happened is a matter of some debate. Cosmologists have long argued over whether the moment of creation was 10 billion years ago, or twice that, or something in between. The consensus seems to be heading for a figure about 13.7 billion years. But these things are notoriously difficult to measure, as we shall see further on. All that can really be said is that at some indeterminate, ununderstandable point in the very distant past. So this is all that can really be said. He's just said all that can really be said. So all that can really be said is that at some indeterminate point in the very distant past, for reasons unknown, there came the moment known to science as T equals zero, which means the time started, material time started. That's all that can really be said, that at some point it started. And everything beyond that is just someone's imagination. And then after that T equals zero, we were on our way. In other words, gradually we evolved, and here we are sitting outside of Melbourne, surrounded by the sun and the trees and the air and everything. That's all we can really say, that here we are. Well, you don't need to be a PhD in astrophysics to say that. There is, of course, a great deal we don't know. Okay, we know that. And much of what we think we know, we haven't known or thought we've known for long. That's the end of his presentation. Now, we will start Krishna's presentation of where everything comes from. And Krishna explains it many times in the Bhagavad Gita. But we just picked one in the seventh chapter right in the beginning. Now, when you talk about a singularity, you're talking about something that's essentially inconceivable. It has infinite density in a infinitely small or infinitesimally small size. It's inconceivable. It has no dimensions. So when you're in the realm of speaking about the inconceivable, you're talking about the realm of God. Because that's one of the basic definitions of the Supreme Lord, that he is inconceivable power. And no matter how we use our finite brains, we can never understand him. So long as they've come that far, they should jump to the next step of accepting we're talking about God, practically speaking. Where does this singularity come from? We can't say, because we don't know anything about it, and time wasn't there. You're talking, time doesn't have any effect on it. It's inconceivably potent. You're talking about Krishna, practically speaking, except without acknowledging that he's God and without acknowledging that he's that he's a person, especially. Maybe we can open up, keep the door open and open up a window too. But here's what Krishna says. First thing he's going to talk about is methodology of understanding this inconceivable. Because the scientists use one methodology, and this is what they come up with. And as Albert Einstein said, I can understand something about the watch, but I can't understand something about the watchmaker by studying the watchmaker's creation. So Sri, please repeat after me. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Maya Shaktam Anaparta. Yoga Yunjan Marasraya. Asamsayam Samagramam. Yatha Gigyasi Tatsvanu. Now Krishna says, Yatha, therefore, Gyagyasi, I'm going to give you this knowledge, Tatshrinu, just hear it from me. A different process, a descending process, where the person, the watchmaker himself, describes himself and the creation, his watch. Now hear, O son of Prita, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, maya ashakta manaparta, with your mind attached to me. In other words, if you have bhakti, if you have devotion, I'm going to explain to you that you, in such a way that you can know me fully, and knowing him fully means his creation as well. And not only that, asamsayam, free from doubt. Because these processes that we just heard about, there's always so much doubt in it because they're always changing the theory from the inflationary Big Bang to the old-fashioned Big Bang to this, to that. But this is a way, through bhakti, to understand it fully and completely, free from doubt. And just like an ordinary person can't understand, can't see what the scientists who've come up with this theory see, we can't see it. We've read this in such a way that we're all laughing at them, but the scientists don't laugh at this because they have their reasoning, they have their mentality through their scientific methodology of seeing in this way, according to the mentality, and we can't penetrate into that. Well, the exalted devotees, due to their bhakti, they can see also, but more clearly, using a different type of a telescope and microscope. They see, and they see the face of the watchmaker. So Krishna is telling this to Arjuna. This is a beautiful painting also. Because Arjuna is so sincerely asking and Krishna is so fully telling him. Next verse. Please repeat. Jnanam teham savijnanam. Idam vakshami asheshataha. Yajyatva nehabuyo anyas. Gyatvayam avasishyate. I shall now declare unto you in full this knowledge, both phenomenal and numinous. Numinous means spiritual. And phenomenal means of the phenomena of this material world. I will declare it to you in full. The scientists cannot see the numinous, the spiritual, because their scientific methodology cannot go there. And the phenomenal, they can only understand partially. But Krishna sees both, because both are his energy. This being known, nothing further shall remain for you to know, if you understand the spiritual and material. So there's the spiritual, there's the material, and let's go on. So Krishna, first he says the process, and then what he's going to teach in the process. The process is hearing in bhakti with mind absorbed in Krishna, and the what is he going to teach is everything spiritual and material. And now the third verse, who is going to actually enter and get this knowledge, just like out of so many students who enter school in the first form or the first grade, how many actually become PhDs? Very, 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 very few. So how many people in this world actually can gain this knowledge? It is not everyone. And the main reason, oh, that's the verse we're talking about, and we'll talk about it after we read it. Manushyanam sahasreshu. At a thousands amongst men, kaschid yat yati siddhaye, yatatam api siddhanam, kaschimam vetti tatvata. Out of thousands amongst men, one may endeavor for perfection. And this is the main reason. Why don't we go up a little bit? One may endeavor. The main reason is that people simply, most people, don't have an interest. Out of thousands and millions, one person is interested in the essence of life, and such a person is so rare. And out of those who have achieved perfection, meaning rid themselves, not thinking that perfection is to achieve something in this material world which will be taken away and smashed by the process of time. So one may, out of those who have rid themselves of the material of just thinking that life is meant to accumulate this and get a house and get a this and get a that and have grandchildren and great-grandchildren, out of those who have given up that concept, hardly one knows me in truth, because they don't take to the process of bhakti. Come. Yeah, come sit here. Yeah. No? Yes, please. Hare Krishna Mataji. How are you? Very good. And that so out of the so many thousands of people in this world, very few, even amongst religious people, very, very few come to the point of the purity of devotion, anya bilasita sunyam, or even want to, even know about it, that come to the point of understanding the abhidhaya tattva, the process of understanding everything, is pure devotional service, and who are willing to make, to sacrifice for that. Because that is the process. Okay. Very few. Keep going. Who will understand the source, the avatari, the source of all the incarnations of the Lord, the avatars, is Krishna in Vrindavan. And this is the fact that we are all sitting here even talking about this is just the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and of course Srila Prabhupada representing Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But it is very rare, and I've been thinking about this point recently, that what we take for granted about Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan, it is so rare and unknown, practically speaking, other than by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It is his gift that he revealed the heart of Krishna and the heart of Braja, Vrindavan. He opened up the heart of God and said, take it. Take the highest possible perfection. What is in the heart of the unlimited supreme person? Take it. Take it. He spread it with the water of his tears. And the great devotees such as Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami Maharaj, they put it in Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's in the Bhagavatam. just take it. And we take it for granted because we have the books and we talk about it in class. But before Mahaprabhu, the heart of Krishna was not known. It was hinted at, but not known. So what an incredible gift of mercy. And by chanting, you can achieve it. Achieve your relationship with Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. Now, so wonderful, actually. But unless we have this taste, we won't even be able to conceive of how wonderful it is. Unless we have the taste of bhakti. Okay. So Krishna says, I will explain to you all the phenomena numinous. But now he's going to explain the knowledge. First he's going to explain the material knowledge. Bhumirapo nalau vayo. Kamano buddha eva cha. Ahankara ityamme bina prakritirastada. So here's the whole scientific analysis is summed up in this one verse. That all the earth, all the water, all the fire, all the air, and the mind, which isn't explained in the very explicitly, the mind, the intelligence, and the sense of ahankar, abhiman, all these together constitute my eight separated material energies, bina prakrita, my external energy. So Krishna is saying that my energy, they come from me. Now, how exactly do they come from Krishna? That's what the scientists, they're trying to understand. How has it all come into being? And there was one of those quotations of Albert Einstein. He was saying that, I want to know the mind of God. Well, just read the book. Well, he tells it to you, but you need faith and you need bhakti. Do you remember that quotation where he said, I want to know the mind of God? But how are you going to know? Just like there's so many people, everyone try to know my mind right now. What am I thinking right now? Strawberry ice cream. But how would you guess what's in my mind unless I said strawberry ice cream? How are you going to know? And this is little Burijan's mind. What to speak of the all-powerful, inconceivable, supreme personality of Godhead's mind, unless he tells you what's in his mind. And therefore, he starts off by saying, Tatsrunu, hear from me. If you try to guess what's in the mind of the Supreme Lord, how will you do it? And it's such a long, laborious process, and you won't get the right answer anyway. So, these eight energies, or Krishna's bina prakrita. There is separated energies. Okay, go on. And they combine together, and all that you see in the material world is not quite a combination of this, of these energies, but almost. There's one thing else that's required. And this is, okay, go on. And here, this is a very interesting verse. Aparyayam idastvanyam prakritim vidime param jiva bhuta mahabaho yedam daryate jagat. So beside these eight energies, there's another kind of energy, my internal energy. Beside these eight, almighty Omdo Juna, there is another, a superior energy of mine. So that superior energy is the jiva, it is the life, it is the soul. that the scientists say just miraculously, impossibly, just somehow or another came into being. But Krishna is saying that the souls are my energy, like rays of the sun. And the combination of these two, the jivas and the external energy, that is what we see in existence. There are always jivas and there are always external energy. And what are the jivas trying to do in this material world? They're exploiting the resources of this material inferior energy. That is the mood of every single conditioned soul, as we call them, jiva. We are trying to exploit, which is a way of saying we are trying to squeeze pleasure from the material world. We're trying to organize and manipulate the material world in such a way that it gives us pleasure, as if I am the center of everything and the purpose of all that exists is for me. That's the struggle for existence of a jiva soul. Let's go down a bit. So just a few pictures of what's come from this manipulation by the jivas combined with the external energy. Before we see this next picture, quickly tell me where is it taken? After you see it, of course.
China.
How did you know?
Well,
not this one. It's the next one, though, I'm talking about. Yeah, the next picture. Where is this taken? Next picture. Where is that taken? Now, why do you think it's taken in China? Everyone says China. Why do you think it's taken in China? I also think it's, but why? Why do you think it's not taken in India? Huh? Chaga Tarini, how dare you say that? Why do you think this is not taken in India, for example? There's that joke the Mumbai mayor said. He said that we will make Bombay like Shanghai, like that. And then the joke in the other way is, you just let us manage Shanghai for 4 years and we will make it like Bombay. But it's funny. I also thought this must be China. I don't know, because you can't see anyone. I can't see their faces. You can't see anyone, but everyone thinks it's China.
What are they doing?
I don't want to find out. Okay, see, don't get into the phenomenal world there. We want to go into the numinous world here. That was your verse, right? About Vitaraga Bayakrota. If you become entangled as I like this, I don't like this, It's all entangling. And if you want to go to Krishna, you have to become attached on that side, on the spiritual side. So then Krishna says in this verse, please repeat after me, Etad yonina bhutani, Savanityu padaraya, Aham Krishnasya jagata, Prabhava pralayastata. All created beings have their source in these two natures. Everything comes from the manipulation of the spiritual and material energy. All that is material and all that is spiritual in this world, know for certain that I am both the origin and the dissolution. So this is Krishna's explanation of the universe. Now, I found this is very interesting because there is Krishna on the top of the painting, and then from him an expansion. Krishna's expansion is Baladev. Baladev's expansion is Mahashankarshan, and from Shankarshan comes Karanadaksha Vishnu. And very interestingly, could maybe go up the painting a little bit. You can't. No, the other way. Sorry. is that they're the universes, the depiction of the universe, they're coming from Mahavishnu. Now, does anyone know what the Bhagavatam says, how they come from him? They come. The universe is in an infinitesimally small point, come from the skin pores of Mahavishnu, and then they expand. And then, after some time, they expand. And then what happens? With his breathing in, out, they expand. And with his breathing in, they come back into his body. And what are the scientists saying? That there's a little infinitesimal space, no bigger than a skin pore, maybe, and it comes out. I mean, I don't know if this is what they're saying is, but it's so interesting. And then it expands out. And I believe, as far as I know, they say it also, the different people say different things at different times. But then after it goes out as far as it can, it comes back. But how, from their scientific methodology, are they going to come out from the point of the universe contracting into understanding the singularity? How are they going to understand this Mahavishnu? What to speak of? No, the other way. What to speak of? This beautiful boy who plays the flute and herds cows and doesn't wear shoes when he's wandering around the pasturing grounds doing gocharan. Now, how are you going to understand that with your speculative mind? But because you can't understand it, does it mean it doesn't exist? But there's a different process of understanding. That's what Krishna is explaining in the Bhagavad Gita. To understand this science of the phenomenal and the numinous, to understand the source of the spiritual and material, you have to adopt a different process, the process of bhakti. Because Krishna is so hard to understand, we take it for granted in many ways. But it's so hard to understand Krishna that even Lord Brahma could not understand. How could the all-powerful Supreme Lord be walking in the land of Braja? And the dust of Braja. How could he be walking through the dust of Braja looking for his cowherd boyfriends? Bhakti is so mysterious. Why? How Krishna acts and why he acts the way he does. How he's controlled by the love of his devotees. Especially by the love of the Brijbasis who love him so much and care for him so much that they don't care for themselves at all. Their love is so extreme for him. And he's controlled by their love. How are you going to understand that unless he explains it to you? Or unless, like Mahaprabhu did, he revealed his heart in his own ecstasy. You cannot understand it by yourself. You can't understand the heart or heartbreaks, or the love of the watchmaker by looking at the watch. How? By speculating. How are you? By using your brain, trying to understand that. How can you do it? You don't even begin to, because you know it's impossible. But does that mean that the watchmaker doesn't have a life? He doesn't have a personality? He doesn't have likes and dislikes? So why does Krishna like what he likes? Well, one way to explain it, why does he like to be the simple cowherd village life? He's a person. Why does he like the flute? He's a person. Why does he like peacock feathers and cows? Why does he like to be with the devotees who love him so much? Well, that's easy to understand. In one sense, because we are his part and parcel and we're the same way. Just imagine if you were unlimitedly wealthy and then everywhere you walk, everyone knows you're unlimitedly wealthy. And what does everyone do? They see you walking down. Well, of course, you don't walk down. You couldn't do it because everyone would crowd around you. And what would they do? Huh? Yeah, no matter what they would do, that's what they would be thinking. Some people would smile. Some people would be planning how to put their finger in your pocket. Some people would be saying, can I make your shoes very shiny? But they would all be thinking the same thing. How can I get what I want from him? So out of the 6 billion people in this world at this point, or 7 billion, people are all the time praying and praying, give me this and give me that and give me this and give me that and give me that and give me this and give me that and give me that and make my enemy slip and break his nose. But this enemy is thinking, may a brick fall on his head. So you have to balance all these things because everyone's praying to you. And then you have to make the sun rise and the moon go, right? He delegates all that. But after like that, you just want to be with people who love you and don't even care that you're the Supreme Lord, that you're unlimitedly wealthy and unlimitedly beautiful. They just love you and don't want anything from you. And they just want to be with you and serve you because they love you. That's Krishna. And how does Krishna deal with these people who love him completely and would do anything for him? Is he like a dictator? You know, I want all these people to love me, and therefore I can just take their love? No. He becomes completely conquered and controlled by their love. He is Bhakta Vatsalya, Atma Pajanta Vadanya. He's completely captivated by them. We long for love because we're his part and parcel, and that's the nature of Krishna, the nature of every individual. We go where there is love. We go where we are loved. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Patram Pushpam. Asnami. So I take, people give me a leaf, a fruit, or water with some devotion, I take it. Now what does the unlimited Supreme Lord need with leaves and flower and water, as if he's lacking leaves and flowers and water where he lives? But he accepts what his devotees give him because it's given with bhakti. And bhakti is the secret. And then in the next verse, Krishna concludes this section to some degree by saying, Mata parataram nanyat kinchirasti dananjaya. Mai savam idam protam sutre manigana iva. O Arjuna, O conqueror of wealth, there is no truth superior to me. Na anyat. So it's not that beyond Krishna is the impersonal and you're supposed to like think of me now. This is what the Mayavadis say. You think of me now, and then because you need to focus your mind on something, and then later when you're advanced, you'll understand that the highest is impersonal. But that's not what Krishna says. He says, Mata parataram nanyat. There's nothing superior to me. Kinchirasti tinanjaya. Mai sivam idam protam. Everything is strung on me. Everything in existence rests upon me. Like what? Pearls are strung on a thread. So what does that mean? Go up to the last photo there. Go a little bit more. Can you see the thread? Or can you see the pearls? You can't see the thread. Is there a thread there? How do you know? How do you know there's a thread there? You can't see it. You're scientists. How do you know there's a thread there? Well, the whole thing. What? Yeah, Koti? Koti scientist? Yeah, it's holding an order together. How, if there was no thread, it wouldn't be together like that. Even a child knows this. Without, as Prabhupada would say, it's just common sense. If there is no thread holding that everything is resting on, the pearls would be flung everywhere. They would go everywhere. So Krishna says, it is me who's doing it, holding everything together. But I'm doing that with just a small part of my attention and energy. This is Mama Angsa Teja Sambhava, just a small part. Angsa, small part. He's unlimitedly powerful, is what he says. I think that's all in this part. Is there anything after this? Only more pearls. The bottom of the thread. Okay. So we've made our fun of the scientists. One time I heard there was a war because the devotees, they like to criticize the scientists. Of course, why? Because Prabhupada used to criticize the scientists. And why did Prabhupada criticize the scientists so much? Is because everyone just blindly accepts what they say and becomes atheistical, materialistic, thinking that life comes from just spontaneously occurred and that there's no source, no spiritual source of anything, and I can do what I want with my life. So Prabhupada would criticize them in that because they're holding together this materialistic civilization. So Prabhupada would criticize it. So one time I heard a devotee listening to one of Prabhupada's morning walk. A devotee started criticizing the scientists. Oh, scientists are like this, scientists are like that, but very superficially, without a deep understanding. And Prabhupada replied, no, we accept what they have accomplished, but why do they have to say that there is no God? Which was Prabhupada's point. Why do they have to say that they get our concept down to singularity? Are we also get a singularity? That's Krishna. Ekala Ishwara Krishna or Sababhritya. There's Sarva Karana Karanam. But then they go from that to nothing. Which is, if there was no thread, if there was nothing thread, there would, pearls would be everywhere. How, where would we be? Where would we exist? How would we digest our food? How would we breathe in and out? How would we blink our eyes? How would the heart beat? How would the lungs take the air and convert it? The heart and the cells convert the oxygen into energy. It's not going on by my power. We evolved into that. Well, just show me. Why don't you evolve a little further? Prove it. Science. Prove it. Prove it. Make one mosquito, that's what Prabhupada would say, and then we'll believe you. We'll give you all the chemicals, make one mosquito, what to speak of, a body that works so amazingly and incomprehensibly and ununderstandably. Make one mosquito. Make one life in your test tube, and then we'll accept it. So no. Why do you have to say there is no God? It just happened. And the proof, there's another quotation that I didn't put in, but they said, somehow we're here, and we've gotten here. The proof of this is how it happened is we're here now, so it must have happened, because here we are, and that's obvious, so this is how it must have happened. And we believe it. So Prabhupada would call that Andar Yatandar Upaniyamanas, the blind leading the blind. And what happens when the blind lead the blind? They end up in a terrible place. Okay, thank you very much, Hare Krishna. You all listened very carefully. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Every time I hear or I read about any scientific discovery, my faith in God increases rather than decreases. Because every time they leaves at a point where it doesn't have a beginning.
Yes.
And that's where when I read the scriptures or other religious knowledge, then I can really correlate that yes, that's where it would have begun.
Yes.
And that's the way they don't know.
Yes.
So, I mean, I thank them so many times by doing the work easy for me to understand God even better.
But I would say for every one of you, there are thousands who go the opposite direction. But yes, you are a fortunate soul. Krishna's given you that vision. You cannot reach the end of it through science because everything you discover leads to so many more questions. What do they call it when they do their subatomic particle analyzation? They have one particle that they say is the ultimate particle, and they call that the God particle. What does that mean? But you'll be sure that they'll try to break that particle apart, see what's in God. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is already telling you what's in Krishna's heart, and also Lord Narayan. He says, what does he say? What does he say? Sadavo Ridayam Mayam. He says that my devotee is in my heart. And who's in the heart of the devotee? It's Krishna. Okay, and then who's in Krishna's heart? Okay, we have our inconceivable aspects. Infinite regression of... Yes, nice comment. Thank you very much. Anyone else like to... question or comment or... What's your name, Prabhu?
Chandrasekhar.
Hare Krishna. Nice to meet you. So what's the next step for you?
Keep increasing the faith and keep doing what I'm doing. And keep, do as much as he desires.
But you said think. Practically, what is practically taking a step forward mean for you? Not in a general, just privately and personally, not to announce to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But just think of, you've been given a gift. Now, how can I take it to the highest level? Because just to know that God exists is one thing. But what is your relationship with him? And how to increase it to the point of actual love? You have so much capacity to do that. So please take advantage of what you've been given, or your spiritual evolution over so many births. So keep moving forward. So you should ask yourself that question, how can I move forward? And come up with practical steps. Anyone else?
When there was a cloning, was there?
When there was?
Cloning?
Yes.
The first time when they achieved this success while cloning?
Yes.
So there was an article the next day saying now they were able to duplicate the human beings and the animals. The next stage, the next step would be they would be able to create the living things.
Yes.
So it's quite funny. I just want to elaborate about this, if you can.
Well, what they do is take life and change its body a little bit, basically.
Yeah.
That's basically what the cloning is. They don't create life. You can do that with a tree, even. Every farmer knows how to do that. you take anyone knows how to graft a tree? You can take a you take an ordinary tree and then you can take the branch of an orange tree or a mango tree. I wonder if you could do it with all the different branches so one tree produces so many fruits. Yeah, that's the way my mind works. Can you do that? Does anyone know?
It's there, yes. As in India, well, particularly farmers, in the farmers show, they were showing this mango tree having all different types of mangoes with it. At round shape, the oval shape, and sweet, sour, all in one tree. It's just, I've seen it.
So did they create life by doing that?
This was the article was saying.
But
that
I'm asking you. Yeah, is that the same as the creation of the tree, of the mango, of the... No, it's just grafting. Yeah. That's what cloning is. So when they say the next step is they'll create life.
Yeah.
So it's always the next step. So when they do it, that's what what did Prabhupada used to call it? Post-dated blank check. Don't worry about anything. Just let me take the BMW car now. And I'll give you a post-dated blank check. You can later on. We'll. So will you give the BMW now? Would you?
No.
Would you? Of course, none of us have BMWs to give. But if we would have one. No, because why? Why wouldn't we give the BMW now? Why? Huh? Because a post-dated blank check is worth nothing. That's why. So that's what Prabhupada would call these tomorrow promises. So he would say, at least give me $10 now, and then we can talk about it. So do something. Create a mosquito now, and then you can talk about it. In this book, the same book, they said previously when Darwin, he came out with his theory, he talked about some warm pond 13 billion years ago or something, and then some electricity hit, some lightning bolt hit it, and then life came from it. That was his idea, basically. But then... And then in the 50s or 60s or maybe 70s, some university student put some proteins in a test tube and he put electricity through it and something came out and then everyone was saying, we've done it. But then after a few years, they're saying, sorry, we didn't do it, actually. And then, so now they say it doesn't come from a warm pond, but the newest theories are that it came from in the bottom of the ocean. I didn't read it carefully enough, but from the bottom of the ocean there are some springs or something like that, and life must have come from there. And there's other theories, even Nobel Prize laureates say that it probably life came from, there was probably some life on a meteor that hit the Earth, and that's where it came from. But where did the life come from the meteor from? Doesn't quite answer the question is how did life come about? So they have to really think of, because they can't do it. They can't do it. They can't prove where it came from. They can't say how it happened. So they have to make up all these new and wild theories. And Krishna says we are eternal and we are his energy. Mamai bhangso jivaloke. Mama eva angso jivaloke jiva bhutas. We are his. And because we are his, when we connect ourselves with him, then we are in our natural position. That's the Krishna conscious philosophy. And by chanting Hare Krishna, we get some experience of a different flavor than the flavor we get, a different taste than the taste we get from trying to exploit the material world and trying to be happy in that way. by serving Krishna. We get a different taste. It's of a different quality of taste. Any other questions or comments? Yes.
For me, it looks like rational speculations and trying to comprehend things by mind. They won't do it, so it's the wrong way. But the whole problem is that for the majority of people, there's no other way, because there's no other way of exploring the world, and that's the whole problem.
So what do you suggest we do?
Obviously, we already have different spiritual practices which offer to us tools which we can use to get the knowledge. But the whole problem, in my opinion, is that people are not ready to accept those tools because they're based on the their mind and their intelligence, and those tools are quite out of the mind and intelligence. But the mind and intelligence are not enough. They are not capable
of understanding the spiritual
of understanding
realm.
And that's like the whole problem.
But what I see is that most people aren't in their mind and intelligence. They're more thinking about their bodies and their senses. So there's the rare people who are in their mind and intelligence, but most people are in they're just trying to enjoy the world with their senses. So how to help those people? Either group. So first of all, kirtan, chanting Krishna's names, is for everyone. And prasadam is for everyone. Because even people who are in their minds have to eat to keep their body together. And prasadam is prasadam. And the chanting of Hare Krishna is something different for them too. And also there's so many books they can study. And they can ask questions and have deep philosophical discussions with the devotees.
Yeah, maybe the whole problem is that they're trying to understand where this way will lead them using their mind, because they don't have anything else to judge, right? And when they are offered such awkward tools, they just can't accept it because they're based on the mind.
But they should try. That's what we ask them. They should try. They have nothing to lose. Nothing to lose. There's nothing harmful that's done that you could possibly harm your body or your mind by getting up early and chanting on beads and being with the devotees and eating wholesome vegetarian food that's offered to Krishna. Studying some philosophy, some ancient philosophy that great sages have studied for thousands of years and say that the answers are all here. What can be lost? How can it? There's nothing harmful. Can't be harmful. So all we can humbly request people is to try, and we should try to make the facilities nice for them so they can try. Any other questions or comments? Because otherwise, now it is 5:30. Oh, it's 5:30, so we can either chant a little bit more, because it doesn't seem to be any deep pressing questions. Who has to work tomorrow or go to school tomorrow? Raise your hand. Raise your hand if your mind has already left and you're half in Melbourne already. Yeah. What do you do tomorrow? What do you do? What's your work? A traffic engineer? What does that mean? Oh, okay. Because in New York, they call the people who collect the garbage from the street sanitation engineers. because you have, because you don't want to say you're a garbage collector, a bungie or something like that. Too insulting, so you have to give a big title. So I thought you were a traffic engineer. Okay, okay, go this way, stop. Where do you work? Okay, is it keeps your interest? It sounds like it's interesting. How long have you been doing it? Okay, and what were your educational qualifications? You majored in the university in traffic engineering. They actually have where was that? Okay, do they have traffic engineering as a course in India? That's funny. I would have never have guessed it myself. I'll tell you, I've been to China too, and China is very different. Very different. Because in India you get, at least around the Delhi area, Vrindavan, Delhi, they have bullock carts and rickshaws, and the people driving on the wrong side of the street, on the road all the time. Your next assignment is to fix the traffic in Delhi. But you have to be God to do that, I think. And that you cannot be. When the baby is held by mother, the baby is satisfied. Sometimes. No. Unless the baby is hungry, but slowly she'll get satisfied. She or he? What's his name? Adit. Is he disturbed by something? What is disturbing him? Oh, I know that feeling. Oh. But when we really wake up from our dream, then we won't cry. This is just waking up from one dream to another in one sense. See, quiet when mother is holding the baby. So Prabhupada, he gave two examples with that. He said when we're actually with Krishna, we become satisfied, we're home. And we could be anywhere in the world doing anything. But if we're living in our relationship with Krishna, if we feel the embrace of Krishna, then wherever we are is satisfying. And on the other hand, the Vyatarek statement in the negation, if we don't have that, wherever we are, we won't feel satisfied. And there will always be something else. Only if I had this, the if only symptom. If only this would, I had this. Only if this would change. If only this, if only this. Krishna explains this in the Bhagavad Gita, the end of the seventh chapter. Icha dvesya samutena dvanva mohena bharata. If only this was different. If only that was different. But instead we change it to if only I was a devotee. A real devotee with real devotion. Okay, thank you very much, Hare Krishna. You've all been such nice devotees listening so carefully. By your mercy, if Mataji and I have said anything good, it is just by your mercy only.